And good evening and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 83. This is Tom Harris in a rather chilly Chicago, Illinois. But you know what? I really am enjoying this sort of chilly weather because for once it hasn't been all of these fluctuations of temperature. It hasn't been going from being super warm to super cold. And this week especially has been kind of a steady, you know, highs in the 50s, lows in the 40s sort of climate. And I think that has got to be almost my ideal climate. Just barely sweater weather. And the only places I can really think of that have sort of a all-year-round climate like that would be somewhere like the Highlands of Scotland or some parts of Scandinavia. So I guess those would be sort of my ideal climates. Don't much go for the hot weather. And that's one of the main reasons why I no longer live in Florida, because I left a long time ago because I just hated living there. I hated the climate. I hated the heat and all that, but I missed some of the people. And speaking of some of the people, I recently got back in touch with an old friend of mine. He's been a friend of mine for many, many years, since the mid-80s, I would say, and certainly since about 87. So I just want to do a shout-out here to Michael down in Fort Myers, Florida, Michael Griffin, who is also a musician who does sort of experimental electronic music. Now, I'm not going to play any of his music on this program. However, I do believe that I'm going to be playing some of it live on the live show. Michael is sending me some CDs of some of his more recent stuff, and so I'm going to do maybe, you know, use it on the show. So thank you, Michael. Now, Michael is a new listener to the program. Because of various limitations in Michael's life, he doesn't get out much, has some health problems that prevent him from getting out and about, and his eyesight is very poor. But he can still listen to podcasts. So people send him podcasts on CD, an MP3 format. And I recently sent him a kind of an assortment of episodes from Tom Harris USA, about 20 episodes. So yeah, a good chunk of them, but not all of them. I'm going to be sending him more, and probably, you know, as I produce more shows, send more shows, and maybe eventually get him caught up. So I am, you know, giving a shout out here to my old friend Michael Griffin. Now, Michael was telling me when I was on the phone with him the other day that he actually sat and listened to the entire CD of Tom Harris USA, something like 10 hours worth of shows. In one sitting, and all I could think of is, oh, the poor, poor man. It's just, oh, that sounds like torture to me. But he says he enjoyed it, but then he's a big Yoko Ono fan, so there you go. Just kidding, Michael. We all love Yoko. Anyway, the live show begins on April 24th. I know I've been plugging the show a lot. Bear with me, folks. The new show starts on Saturday, April 24th. And that is at 10 a.m. Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, which is 4 p.m. in the U.K. And I'm really looking forward to that now. Now, the other day I did some sound checks. I did a live sound check on the United Kingdom radio, and I actually deleted the files. I had to make sure that the recording was working, make sure it sounded okay and all that stuff, make sure that my levels were set. And I just want to give a shout out to the people who helped me out. Irving Distiller helped me out a little bit by calling in and talking with me about nonsense for about 20 minutes. Gary Burton was willing to help me out, but kind of had some problems with the microphone and got those sorted out. But thanks, Gary, because, you know, even though he didn't really do anything, he alerted to me the fact that there was a problem because he tried to call me and I couldn't hear him. And we managed to get that sorted. And also to Pete, who was listening on the stream and letting me know that he could hear me and that the volume wasn't too bad and that the jingles didn't sound too bad. So there's all sorts of people who are out there who are helping. And the show is ready to go. And again, I have some games and stuff. So I'm looking forward to it. And of course, it's going to be a little different from this show. This show, sometimes I talk about deep subjects and heavy topics and things like that. That show is going to be a little bit more lighthearted and a little more chatty and hopefully a little more fun for people. And I'm hoping to get lots of phone calls. I kind of wonder why nobody on United Kingdom Radio has been doing shows on Saturday. It would seem to me that that would almost be a perfect time to do a radio show Saturday afternoon. So that's why I'm doing it that time. And also that's easiest for me. Anyway, please feel free to listen. The website is unitedkingdomradio.co.uk, and you can Skype into that show using the Skype address, which is United Kingdom Radio. All right. So this is the last Tom Harris USA that will be on the 5-day schedule. As you know, this show is posted every 5 days. Until this show, and this is the last of the 5-day shows. Now, what's going to be happening at this point is that next episode of Tom Harris USA, episode number 84, will be posted next Wednesday, and then each show thereafter will also be posted on Wednesday. So we'll have a show on Wednesday, and then the hour-long live show on Saturday. So that is going to be the new schedule of the show, so you can almost set your clock by it. As long as your clock, you can set it to, you know, Wednesday and Saturday. Anyway, so I hope you all didn't mind too much the semi-rerun show that I had last time. The last weekend was C2E2 weekend. Now, I've had a number of people who actually messaged me on Facebook asking me what is C2E2 and whether or not it was similar to R2D2. Well, actually, it's not similar to R2-D2, though I did see an R2-D2-type robot at C2-E2. C2-E2, very simply put, is the Chicago Comics and Entertainment Exposition. And it was down at the McCormick Place, big convention center down south of downtown Chicago. Pretty good clip from here, but it was still not too bad. Pete and I actually took public transportation down there. It takes about an hour or so, maybe a little more than an hour to get down there. And thankfully, we didn't have to do it all the hard way, because we managed to hook up with the owner of the local comic shop, who's a friend of mine, and get on the shuttle bus, which was running from the downtown hotels down to McCormick Place. So that actually worked out really well for us. Anyway, it was a great time. C2E2, I have to say, is one of the best conventions that I've been to. As far as the facility was concerned, as far as the selection of talent that was there that you could talk to and, you know, have them sign things and so forth. And I was pretty impressed with it. You know, we've been to Wizard World, which is the other kind of convention here in Chicago, and that, you know, takes place out in Rosemont and one of the convention areas out there. And like a lot of the conventions I've been to, those have been, you know, very cramped, very dark. And yeah, the first thing that really struck me about going into this McCormick Place convention is that, you know, it's a large area, big convention space, but there's windows. You can see the sky. It's not like being in someone's basement. Though I'm sure a lot of these comic fans and sci-fi fans spend a lot of time in their parents' basement anyway, but I just thought it was lovely. And the other thing that really, really struck me about this convention was the caliber of the guests. The guests they had, you know, going down Artist Alley. Now, most of the time, you know, you go to Wizard World or wherever, and you haven't heard of any of the people. You don't know who they are. You don't know what they've done. They haven't really done anything terribly significant. They may be professionals, but they do small press and that sort of thing. Now, the Artist Alley at C2E2, they had some pretty big names. People that I'd actually heard of. People whose work I was familiar with. And I'm not even collecting comics anymore. So it was pretty neat. And one of the highlights for me was having the opportunity to chat with the writer and artist Colleen Doran. And we talked to her for about a half an hour. And, you know, it was a thrill to meet her. And I do mean that. It was a thrill because I've been a fan of Colleen Doran for years and years and years. She did a lot of work for DC Comics back in the 80s. She had her own, has her own ongoing series called A Distant Soil, which I believe is self-published now. At the time, though, it wasn't. And that was a series that my ex-wife was a big fan of, just a huge fan of. But she's always done this magnificent artwork, and it was just such a thrill to meet her. And she was a very nice lady. So I was really, really happy to meet her. Now, we also, you know, talk to some other people. I talked to Michael Golden, who would be very familiar for Marvel Comics fans from the 1970s. He did Micronauts. He did several other things. And he's probably best known for his own character, Bucky O'Hare, which was a comic and also a Saturday morning cartoon at one point. And so, you know, it made me wonder why, you know, those older artists, you know, that they've been around for a little while, they didn't have very many people coming up and saying hello to them. And you kind of wonder, well, why not? Why, you know, is it just that they're out of the public eye? You know, you'd think that people would be going up to them, you know, with stacks of Micronauts to sign or stacks of Distant Soil or things like that. But I was really impressed with the caliber of the guests, the artists in Artist Alley. They had some other guests, this sort of movie, TV-related guests. They had a bunch of Star Wars people. They had Peter Mayhew, who played Chewbacca. They had Carrie Fisher, who played Princess Leia. They had some of the lesser characters as well, but those were kind of the two big ones. And I was pretty happy with the convention overall. Now, we did run into Matt Kramer, Matt from the Legion of Substitute Podcasters podcast. Had a nice chat with Matt and his wife, Sarah. So hello, guys, if you're listening. And we talked to the guys from Raging Bullets for a few minutes, which is another comics-related podcast. I've listened to it a few times, but it's not one I have to say. You know, I kind of pretended like I listened to their show a little bit more than I had. I've probably listened to maybe four of them now, and a couple of them have been after the convention, so I don't seem like I've completely not ever heard of them. But it was a good time, and unfortunately, Matt didn't really have time to do any audio with me. He was kind of running around getting interviews for his podcast and talking to some of the professionals, and I was just really not amazed, but I had a nice time there, and Pete had a good time there. Of course, lots of dealers, lots of merchandise, lots of stuff. Now, I got away pretty cheaply this convention. One of the things, even though I'm not collecting comics that much anymore, one of the things that I do collect is original comic book art. And I managed to pick up a couple of Legion of Superheroes pages for $30 a piece. So, and you know, for original art, that's not too bad. We saw pages that were in, you know, the range of, you know, $15,000. And that would be for stuff like original Jack Kirby pages or original Wally Wood pages. So, and looking through the original art is always one of my favorite parts about going to comics conventions, because you never know what you're going to find. And so it's pretty darn cool. So I have to say that C2E2 was the most fun that I've had at a comics convention since the 1990 San Diego Comic-Con. Now, San Diego is sort of the granddaddy of all the Comic-Cons. It's the big one, the big show that everyone goes to. And I've only been once back in 1990. Would love to go again. C2E2 begins the convention season. Convention season usually runs from, you know, springtime to about September. And there's, you know, various large conventions kind of scattered around the U.S. Of course, San Diego being the biggest of them. And I think New York Comic Con is another one that's pretty big. But anyway, then we have decided, Pete and I have decided, that we are going to go to ASIN again this year. Now, I think I had said a couple episodes ago that we weren't going to go. And it was a money thing, and we just didn't feel like going and all that. But while we were at C2E2, we stopped by the ASIN booth. They actually had a booth set up at the convention, and we got a hugely good deal on the tickets. And so it was sort of kind of, we kind of looked at each other and, you know, said, should we do this? Should we go to another convention? And that's going to be only a month from now. And Pete really wanted to go. And I said, you know what? You know, I've been thinking about things that we can do for our anniversary, because our 5-year anniversary is coming up at the end of April. And I think that ASIN is a good anniversary gift. So we're going to go to ASIN. So another convention that's 2-in-1 spring. I think that's my record. I think that's actually my record. So not only did we get to go to the big comics convention, but we're going to get to go to the big anime convention as well. So lots of manga and anime and and lots of cosplay, a lot of people running around in colorful outfits. So that'll be a good time, and that'll be coming up actually in May. I think 4 weeks from this weekend. How that'll affect the live show, I'm really not sure. I'm going to try to do a live show anyway, but we'll see. So last week when I was putting together the rerun show, the episode 5 Reloaded show, I was thinking a lot about syncretism, because that was one of the topics that I was talking about on the show. And sort of the larger connotations, the consequences of the sort of syncretism that we saw in Ireland during the Dark Ages, and that we saw in Rome and in other places that sort of incorporated different cultures' beliefs into their own. And I brought up the fact that Christianity is in fact a syncretic religion of its own. There's a lot of things that it's sort of based on a combination of Jewish mysticism and Roman religion, which is where you get things like communion from, the Holy Eucharist, that sort of thing. And I was thinking about it the other day, and it seems to me, in thinking about this, that one of the things about syncretism that I think is very unusual is that I think the general public doesn't realize how much of their belief system was actually borrowed from other cultures, and especially in regards to Christianity. Now, I did talk a little bit about, you know, how the Roman religion influenced Christianity and kind of interjected things like praying to saints and, you know, eating the flesh of a god, the sort of ritual cannibalism of communion. But there's actually even more in there, and I think that can be illustrated even more vividly by pointing to Christian holidays. Now, we just had Easter just passed. It was just a few weeks ago now. And at some point I was having a conversation with somebody I know, and this woman is a Catholic. She's a practicing Catholic. She goes to Mass and all that. She went to Catholic school. And I mentioned Easter. You know, we're talking a little bit about Easter, and she asked me if I was doing anything for Easter, and I said, and she knows I really don't celebrate holidays. That's not really my thing, and certainly not religious holidays. And I actually asked her, you know, if she knew, you know, anything about the origins of the holiday, because Easter in particular, and Christmas also, are notably syncretic traditions. And what really kind of irked me is that, you know, she said, well, I went to Catholic school, so yeah, they taught us all about that. And I don't think she was actually talking about actually having learned about the goddess Astara, but she was talking about this egg symbolism that the Catholics like to push. They've sort of incorporated this sort of Catholic symbolism into the Easter egg tradition. And she showed absolutely no curiosity about learning the truth. But stuff like Easter eggs and Christmas trees, there's nothing like them anywhere in the Bible. There's a lot of other places that where you can get this information, so I don't need to rehash it here. But the whole idea of Easter is a pagan idea, much like the communion and much like other beliefs that have sort of seeped into Western culture from older cultures before it. And you know, the syncretism is everywhere. You know, it's Easter, it's Christmas, it's Halloween. But we have all these traditions, and we don't even know why we're celebrating them. We don't even know why we put up a Christmas tree. You know, people don't really think about it. And I suppose that is one of those things that bothers me, is when, you know, people don't actually have enough curiosity about their traditions and, you know, their cultural practices, that they really don't understand why they're doing it. People don't know where Easter eggs came from. They don't know where the Easter bunny came from. To them, they don't really think about it. It just kind of always has been. And I can only wonder, you know, at the time when the Christians were actually inserting their religious beliefs into these pagan traditions. Now, I've often heard it said by Christians that Jesus is the reason for the season. And you talk about Easter and you talk about Christmas. Jesus is the reason for the season. When in reality, nothing could be further from the truth. not only is Jesus not the reason for the season, he's just been kind of shoehorned in there to keep people from practicing their cultural traditions. So in a way, Jesus is the invader here. And Christianity is something that, you know, has corrupted these beliefs. Now, I'm not saying that the pagan religions are any more truthful or any more valid than Christianity. Far from it. They're all equally invalid. But it's an element of history that I think that a lot of people just ignore. And they don't care about. And you know, some of them might find it interesting if they did know about it. But that's what syncretism is. You know, they incorporate these elements of a pagan, you know, of a pagan holiday into their belief system in order to convert the pagans to their own belief system. You start incorporating Jesus into Christmas, and then eventually you're going to start thinking that Jesus is the reason Christmas exists, but nothing could be further from the truth. You know, most of the Christmas traditions we have, such as trees and giving gifts, are traditions that existed way before Christianity. You know, they were Druid beliefs, pagan beliefs in the British Isles. And people just don't think about this stuff. And I guess, you know, if I think about it long enough, it kind of irks me. I mean, I really don't care what people celebrate. I don't really celebrate much of anything. But it is something that I find very curious and something that I think that more people should look into. But then again, you know, as I've talked about on the show many, many times, I think people should seek out knowledge. I think that people should question things. I think that people should be curious about things. I think one of the things that I'm seeing in this day and age, and actually I was talking about this with Michael on the phone the other day, who I mentioned earlier, and we're talking about how media-driven society is now, and how everything relates to television, and how so many people are only getting their information from forums that rely on paid advertising, and the editorial decisions of television and radio are driven by the selling of product. And this is actually a conversation that I've had with Pete any number of times, because, you know, inevitably the topic comes up, well, why did they cancel such and such a series? Because everybody loved it. And I have to remind him, I probably don't have to remind him, but I do remind him, probably much to his dismay, that in the broadcast business, in the business of television, the programming that you see, the dramas, the comedies, the sitcoms, all this stuff is referred to by the broadcasters, by the networks, by the advertisers, as filler. The message is really the advertising. They want you to buy Cheerios. They want you to buy toilet paper. They want you to buy whatever it is that they're selling. They want you to buy iPods. They want you to buy cell phones. And the programming itself doesn't mean anything to the networks. It's a way of attracting people to watch the advertising. And that's what it's all about. They don't give a rat's ass about how good or bad a TV series is, only that it will attract advertisers to advertise on their network. And however many people watch it, it's irrelevant. I mean, this would explain why Different Strokes was on for so long, because it was appealing to advertisers. You know, there's a lot of other shows that kind of went on and on for years and years and years, even though they were very mediocre. And it's all about the ability of these shows to attract advertisers. Now, of course, one of the triggers for attracting advertisers is how many people are watching the show. It is interconnected. But it's one of the reasons why a lot of good shows don't last. And because a lot of good shows require thought. And people who are sitting there watching TV are not thinking. This is a passive experience. They are taking in information, or they're taking in entertainment. And along with it, they're taking in the marketing. Because that's the whole purpose of television anyway, is marketing. And it's really kind of frightening when you start thinking of it that way. And think of the implications. Because it's not just the sitcoms that you have that are selling the advertising. It's also the news programs. It's also the political shows. And these things are driving public opinion. And it doesn't matter, you know, which of the cable networks you are, which of the TV networks you are. It could be CNN, could be Fox News, could be MSNBC, could be BBC, could be any of them. They're just trying to sell orange juice and blenders. They're not trying to sell, you know, information. They're not trying to give you accurate information necessarily. And it's kind of a scary thought. And I've often said, you know, people spend way too much time paying attention to the mainstream media. And I know I've talked about this on the show before, but I really think that the thing that people need to do is turn off the TV and pick up books. You know, go to the library. You can get books for free. As many as you want. And that is sort of one of the reasons why I don't watch television. And, you know, if they can manipulate you into buying Charmin or buying Honey Nut Cheerios, what else can they manipulate you into buying? Can they maybe manipulate you into thinking that the president was born in another country? Could they maybe manipulate you to believe that psychic powers are real? I think the mainstream media is a terrible place to get information. And that people should be reading, you know, scientific journals or newspapers. Newspapers still have a relatively good reputation for presenting information. Of course, there's your tabloids, your New York Posts and your National Enquirer and all, you know, the sort of popular tabloids. And that's especially true, I think, over in the UK. I think you have more trashy papers over there than we have here currently. But it's really something to think about. Are you being manipulated by the media? And it's one of the things about podcasting, too. You can be manipulated by podcasts just as much. And I guess what my intention is to try to teach you how not to be manipulated. And I think that the best answer for how not to be manipulated is to actually research issues, research questions that you have, do it all yourself. Go look up scholarly works. Go look up in the encyclopedia. Go, you know, read books. Get your information from better sources than TV and radio. Or podcasts for that matter. It's fine to listen to podcasts or radio or television for enjoyment. As long as you understand that maybe you are being manipulated. Maybe public opinion is being driven by the need to sell products. It's a bit worrying, really. And I don't think there's anything that we can do about it, because I think that you know, too many people are enthralled to TV. But how much TV do people watch? Hours and hours and hours of it, every single night. I know people who watch TV for 4 or 5 hours a night. That's just absolutely incredible to me. How could you watch that much garbage? Even if it's educational garbage. Anyhow, I'm running short on time. I didn't mean to go off on that sort of tangent. But hey, you know, that's what the show is. It's all kind of my musings and all that. Anyhow, I'm running out of time, so thanks for listening. And as always, the email address if you want to participate in the show is tom@tomharrisusa.com. Don't forget the live show starting on April 24th and running every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 4 p.m. over in the UK on unitedkingdomradio.co.uk. So thanks for listening. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. Signing off. We'll see you next time.